activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It's Thursday, December 12th, 2013. Welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 91 from Waterloo, Iowa, for now. I'm Dave. Garden Slugs got more out of life than you, Nelson. Joining me this evening from Wausau, Wisconsin, is Brad. I never liked a girl well enough to give her 12 sharp knives, Ludwig. And Anessa, it's a night you've got to party hardy, Marty Moines from Denton, Texas. I have no idea what I just read.
These are quotes from the movie Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Oh, okay. That's a great movie. Great film.
Gotta party hard, Marty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Fact.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. It's been a few weeks, but we are back for this episode, and then we're leaving again for about a month. So
surprise!
Yeah, things have gone down since we last talked. Major stuff has gone down since we last talked. Do you think I should talk about it? Want me to talk about it?
It's up to you.
Okay. Well.
Okay. Now I'm ready.
Okay. Well, I got fired again.
Aw.
Yeah.
Boo.
Hang on. I got something for that. Here we go. And Brad's wearing sunglasses. So,
are they 3D glasses?
Yes, they are 3D glasses.
Put them on again. Please.
See, normally I use the Google Hangouts effects board to put on the glasses. I figured I'd actually.
You have, in real life, you have IRL glasses.
Yep. And everything looks so much better when I wear these.
Yeah.
It's all in 3D.
The
future, for reals.
The future is so bright and in 3D that you have to wear shades.
It's a fact.
So, okay. Continuing on with the drama that went on. So, I got fired from my second job in 3 years. so.
It's not too bad, though.
Yeah.
Some people get fired like every other month.
Yeah, this was for better reasons. It wasn't as personal as the last time, so I guess I got that going for me. My girlfriend and I, Stephanie, decided that this was like fate intervening, and I have decided to move to Canada. So by the end of this month, I will be a visitor of Canada. Until I can get some kind of like work going and become a somewhat resident of Canada, so
there you go.
This is the last. I'm packing up everything. I'm getting rid of stuff. I'm trashing things. I'm selling things. So I'm stripping down my life and putting everything in my little tiny car and driving it all the way up to Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So the next time that we podcast, I'll be saying, "This is Dave Nelson from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada." We will be a truly international network here. We're going to be multi-time zone, multi-international company.
Multinational.
Because we've got East Coast Canada, we've got Central Time, you guys, and then Paul, for the time-traveling robots in space, he's West Coast. So, we're all over the place.
And Texas,
man,
is like a whole other country.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, totally. Well, it actually was for a while, right?
Actually, well, I know on commercials for Texas, they're like, it's like a whole other country. So that's our thing now, apparently.
Well, not theoretically, but it was a whole other country before it joined the United States.
Well, we were a whole other country.
Yeah, so there's that.
Not anymore.
No, But that's the sit report. That's the sit rep for you guys.
The sitch. That's the sitch.
Yep. So got that going on.
All of a sudden turned into an episode of Kim Possible.
That's what I was thinking.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
That's actually the ringtone for my ex-wife when she calls as the Kim Possible communicator.
Oh, nice.
Can we talk about something that I actually know what we're talking about? Please.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Like aliens?
Yes! That's why we're here. We're here to talk about aliens in science fiction and science in real life, all over the place, film, TV, video games, comic books, you name it. Where they're at, we're there covering it. 24 hours a day.
Oh, we're talking about aliens? I'm in the wrong podcast. Sorry.
You better get out of here then. Yeah.
Just kidding.
All right, so how we do it is we break it down into three sections. The news, the creature feature, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien, and our picks for the week. For the audio subscribers, you can watch us do the show live. Actually, watch us on video, either live or archived on youtube.com/galacticnetcast or at galacticnetcast.com/live. And before we get underway, we've got one request for you. Stitcher Awards are coming up, and we would love that you would nominate us for a Stitcher Award. And how you do that is by going to http://stitcher.promotw.com. You got that? All right. Stitcher?
No.
Promotw.com. Are you going there, Brad?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hopefully it's a simple, painless process, and we'd appreciate it if you would nominate us for a Stitcher nomination. All of our podcasts are on Stitcher, so you've got Alien Invasion, you got Time Traveling Robots in Space, and you got the On Hiatus Sci-Fi Film School. So thank you in advance for the nominations. All right, let's get the show on the road and start with the news.
In the news.
Anessa, I can't believe that...
I've got a novel of a story.
This is a hell of a story. So start the show off right with this behemoth.
All right. So when will we build the Starship Enterprise?
Ooh. And this relates to this podcast because there were aliens on that ship, right? Is that why we're talking
yes.
about that? Okay. All right.
There are aliens on the ship, and they encountered aliens on planets.
And this could help us encounter aliens with our own Starship Enterprise, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, a practical way to travel between the stars is a must-have for space opera, but we are never really going to boldly go worlds around other suns. We'll have to if we hope to occasionally bump against ornery aliens or perhaps trespass into some advanced race's galactic empire. For that, I think we'll need an action radius of at least 50 light years, a distance that's far beyond the reach of our current rocket technology. So, with that said, when will we have the Enterprise? Plenty of people have spent plenty of time noodling this. They've considered all the various ways to get a rocket up to a relativistic velocity, a respectable fraction of the speed of light, and problem number one is basic physics. It's easy to reckon that the oomph to hurl a smart car-sized spacecraft to another star at, say, 20% the speed of light, and land it when it arrives, is the energy contained in 50 billion gallons of gasoline. Tank in the smart car isn't big enough. So engineers have looked at the practicality of non-chemical compulsion, fission, or fusion rockets, barely adequate for the nearest stars, or the motive of power of the fictional Enterprise matter-antimatter fuel. So, oh goodness. Excuse me. Other approaches include dispensing with onboard fuel altogether and either scooping it up en route or nudging the ship toward with a high-powered laser beam from Earth. That's a really interesting idea, to like use a laser beam to like push something away from Earth.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of reminds me of like, was it Scooby? Like the old cartoons, and they would use like lasers to like push something or like a beam of light to like pull something like a tractor beam.
Let me tell you, back in the day, either cartoons or in live action, they used lasers for everything.
And they did.
Including my pick that I've got later on, they used the hell out of lasers, let me just say.
There you go. So if that fails, if the laser beam thing fails, I've totally lost my place.
Yeah, oh, I can see why. This is a huge article.
There's always plan B, the literally laid back approach. Simply put the crew to sleep and accept the fact that it's going to be a long ride. Unfortunately, boldly going where no man has gone before is
bedly.
Not bedly going where no man has gone before is not much help if your goal is to truly interact with the cosmos. So we could put everybody to sleep, but nobody's going to see anything. It's, yeah.
And you could wake up and you'd be Khan.
Khan! But unlike the most prosaic schemes noted above, wormhole travel is not a guaranteed possibility. However, here's another thought. What if we could send humans anywhere at the speed of light and at a rock'em bottom price?
Whoa, hang on.
Consider.
Hey, is this an actual possibility in NASA?
Yes.
It is.
So, consider the human genome consists of about 3.3 billion base pairs. Since there are only four types of pairs, that amounts to 0.8 gigabytes of information, or about what you can fit on a CD. With the microwave radio transmitter, you could beam that amount of information into space in a few minutes and have it travel to anyone at the speed of light.
Oh, my God.
But why not stop there?
Oh, my God. Hang on. Hang on. You can't just gloss over that, Anessa. Okay?
I can.
Okay. Number one, you can fit a human being on a CD, like all the information that
the
would
information.
Be.
You could fit the DNA, not the knowledge.
Okay.
But like
the information,
the code.
Construct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically a human.
And then beam that information out into space.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Continue.
All right. So why stop there? The difference between your DNA and that of any other Homo sapiens is about 1.4 million base pairs, or only one part in 3,000. In other words, you can include 3,000 of your best friends by the simple expedient of encoding only their differences with you. Yes, the life experience and college education are not included, but at least our species could travel to the stars. So that's one way of getting humans out there.
Okay.
Without having them sleep. Or the other issues with fuel.
There's all kinds of issues going on there.
Sending a DVD's worth of data is fast, relatively cheap, and desperately easy. And the ability to send thousands of or millions of individuals for little more than the single ticket price sure beats rocketry. But, of course, there's the obvious problem that if anyone picks up this broadcast, will they know what to do with it? They might. It seems reasonable to assume that any organic life will have a, quote, blueprint molecule or a set of molecules that specify its hereditary structure. Sure, it might not be helical in form or based on exactly the same chemistry as DNA, but an architecture molecule might well be a common fact of life, even on other worlds. And if that's so, then perhaps either the ether is replete with Johnny Appleseed-like efforts to beam species around. It could be that one piece of apparatus that any tech-savvy civilization will have is a good 3D printer, able to build complex biology. Such things are being developed in earthly labs as you read this.
I saw a story last night, something about using a 3D printer to coat bones with molecules or coat bones with some kind of...
Stem cells.
Yeah, stem cells. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what they're doing.
It is. Yeah, it really is. And, yeah, it could also be like we could just be sending life out there and starting other civilizations.
I really think that this has begun like within the last, like this year. I think this year will be looked back at a time that we really started in earnest to put people out there, because there's all these private companies now in other countries that are working on missions to the moon, missions to Mars. They're going to start growing vegetables on the moon. I read an article the other day that NASA is actually working on faster than light travel. And then there was a theory I saw that it doesn't take, it's going to be a lot easier than taking the power of one star. Like they can do it for less than that now, apparently. I don't know. But
I remember an article about that a while back.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think it's Japan, or no, China is going to the moon.
Yeah.
And India is on their way to Mars.
Yeah, it's like, I really think that this year will be marked in the history books was the year that we really started in earnest to try to go boldly go where no man's gone before, you know?
Yep. So we're trying to break away.
Yeah. So, all right, good job. Thank you very much, Nessa. That was a monster of an article. I applaud you for that.
And you know, when I prepped the show, I took out a lot of hyperbole and crap from that article to get it down to where it was. So
wow. So yeah. a lot of editorial nonsense stuff that we really didn't need to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, I commend you for that.
Got to the meat of the story,
Brad. I appreciate that. And I think that you deserve this.
Yes!
All right.
Ermagerd!
Hang on. Okay, we added a couple of new things to the soundboard this week. All right? One of the things is something that Brad said before the show, and I captured it and put it on the old soundboard. Here it is.
Ermagerd!
It's almost like a siren. It's almost like a red alert, you know? I should do a remix.
It's an alert of something cool that's about to happen, perhaps.
And then I also, this is one of my favorite things ever in the universe of things, right here.
Alan! 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 Alan!
And,
Alan!
If you know where that comes from, good for you. Good on you. Brad and I do. We had to explain it to Anessa.
I'm sorry, whenever I think about it. To laugh, it's hilarious.
I'm just waiting for the day that we have a story quoting a guy named Alan, and that's going to come in really handy.
Or perhaps we talk about something in the Van Allen belt or something like that, and we can
Alan, Alan.
All right, let's move on to story number two, and this is mine. Obama lighthearted acknowledgement of Area 51. What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, from what many can see as lighthearted humor. Ooh, this came from either a English country or a Canadian country.
Yes.
RealUFOs.net. It's got to be focused, or it's got to be from a, because they spelled humor with a U. Yes.
So what's the story about, Dave?
Oh, okay, sorry. I'm very easily sidetracked tonight for some reason.
I want to know.
Okay.
Canada, UK, come on. Okay. What's Obama talking about here?
Concentrate. Focus, Dave.
Ermagerd.
This is as close as a president has ever come to actually disclosing the topic. President Barack Obama reflects on Saturday. That must have been like last Saturday or previous.
Yep, just this last Saturday. Okay.
About what the number one thing at the time wanted him to achieve. Okay, this is worded really weirdly.
You skipped a word.
Okay.
Yeah, about the number one thing wanted him to achieve.
Okay, when he was elected president, and that was find out what's going on at Area 51. Then he mentioned, surprisingly, he'd have to simply ask Shirley MacLaine to find out what this was.
He said it to her face.
Oh, she was at this event as well. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Then Obama mentioned, I think I've become the first president to ever acknowledge Area 51. See, he was totally joking. He wasn't serious at all.
He at least acknowledged like people's desire, I guess.
Yeah,
rather than like, whatever, brush it off, not gonna say anything.
Yeah, so. Yeah, there is that. And I mean, we all know that the place exists. Whether the place actually has crashed UFOs or experimental aircraft based on alien technology, that remains to be seen. And I think he realizes the lightheartedness of this topic. So that's awesome. Do you know what event this was, Brad?
It was an awards thing.
This wasn't at Mandela's funeral, was it?
No.
All right. Because you know he did a selfie at the funeral.
No, you know, it was there's like five or six different people that were seated.
Hang on. I can actually play the quote.
Yes, you can.
Okay, here we go. Hopefully there's no ad attached to this video.
Yes, there is.
Now, there is.
When you first become president, one of the questions that people ask you is, what's really going on at Area 51? When I wanted to know, I called Shirley MacLaine. I think I just became the first president to ever publicly mention Area 51. How's that, Chris?
Yeah, he totally said that because she was there.
Yep.
Now, who else was sitting up? Was that Carlos Santana as well?
I haven't seen the video.
It looked like it.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it.
Yeah. They look like they're all getting some kind of award or acknowledgement. They had those ribbons around their necks.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool, though. I like that. You know, for all the crap that he's been getting lately, he can still come out once in a while and do something awesome. And that's pretty awesome. And then he takes a selfie at the funeral. and negates that.
Well, I mean, at least he didn't take a selfie with someone committing suicide.
That's true.
Which apparently somebody did.
Yes.
Yeah, that was nasty thing.
Did you guys see that whole article about all the inappropriate? There was like a whole series of inappropriate selfies. Like, and there was a whole bunch of funeral selfies. There was one where a guy was doing a selfie with the casket in the background. And that's not cool.
Wow.
That's not cool. Are you doing some kind of research there, Brad?
Yeah, I'm trying to find the actual... it keeps looping me around.
You know, if Galactic Netcast had a I team, you would be the head of the I team.
The I team?
Yeah, investigative.
IT.
No, I team, like investigative reporting team.
Oh,
like
okay.
You know, like news.
I was thinking like IT.
No, I team, like a investigative reporting team for like a news station or something.
Ah,
here we go. Right. It was at the Kennedy Center Honors. Good Lord, can USA Today put more crap on their page? All right.
Challenge accepted.
let's see. Annual Kennedy reception.
I can't believe it's been a year since the last one, because it seems like it was only just yesterday that the last one had like Led Zeppelin and a bunch of musicians last year.
Ah, yes. Herbie Hancock.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Billy Joel.
Oh, wow.
Shirley MacLaine. And you were right, Carlos Santana.
Hey, look at me.
And Martina Arroyo.
Aurora?
She's an opera Arroyo.
Okay.
She is a opera singer.
Okay. Cool. Well, thanks for getting down to getting to the bottom of that, Brad. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I love a challenge.
All right.
I love a parade.
And we would love your feedback.
Absolutely.
Yeah? And there's many easy ways that you can do that. You can email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can also call our voicemail number, which is going to stay the same. It doesn't matter that I'm going to Canada. Our voicemail number will stay the same. It is 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. You can also go to galacticnetcasts.com and find contact links there as well. Oh, one last thing. I had this at the very bottom of the show, but I want to take it to the top. Or not to the top, but where we're at now. We have a survey out that we would love your feedback on. Go to tinyurl.com/galacticsurvey2013. And I'll mention this again at the bottom or at the end of the show. tinyurl.com/galacticsurvey2013. And we've got a few questions. It'll take you like just a couple minutes. Very easy. Just some feedback on how we're doing, what you'd like to see us do in the future, what you like about our network. And apparently I can't talk. Just general, you know, what's good, what's bad, what you'd like improved, what you think that we should add, that kind of thing. It'll make us a better network in the future. So again, that is tinyurl.com/galacticsurvey2013. Okay, on to Brad.
All right. Now, we've talked about this earlier. But Tom Cruise's war is endless in the first Edge of Tomorrow trailer.
Oh, my God. That trailer's so awesome.
It's, you know, and yeah. Tom Cruise is cursed to repeat his life in Edge of Tomorrow, but he isn't stuck on Groundhog Day. He's stuck in a weapons-laden power suit in the middle of an alien invasion where he dies. And then he wakes up to do it all over again. The first trailer reveals that, if nothing else, the action scenes will be spectacular. Doug Liman is a pretty excellent director who almost certainly isn't going to phone in a standard sci-fi action flick, and all the exoskeleton stuff looks great. This reviewer on IO9 says that he only has two problems. One, the music in the trailer kind of sucked, I guess.
You know what? Let me interject. I loved the music in the trailer. It was really cool, I thought.
Okay. And the fact that the movie is no longer called All You Need Is Kill, since it was based on the Japanese sci-fi novel of the same name. And the reviewer says, of course, I think most movies could be improved if they were retitled All You Need Is Kill.
Snarky, snark, snark.
Yeah, a little bit. But anyways, no, we've been talking about this movie for, good Lord, would you say
it's been
8 months to a year?
I think it's been in early part of, at the very beginning of when we started this podcast. I mean, it seems like forever since we've been talking about
it. Yeah, I think it was in development hell for a little bit, and then
Yeah,
I know we've been talking about this for a while, but what was the What was the movie where the soldier gets injected into somebody's head? Was it Code or Was that Jake Gyllenhaal?
Source Code.
Source Code.
Yeah. It's very.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of of that in sort of.
Yeah, I already have a couple of theories about where this movie goes, like what he is actually. You know, I have theories, but I'm not gonna say what they are because that could spoil it for you. So I will say
Tell me nothing. Do not ruin this for me.
At one time, I had this movie mixed up with that last Tom Cruise movie that came out earlier this year.
Oh, Oblivion.
Yes.
Oblivion?
I had the two. I thought they were the same movie at one time for some reason.
I think, yeah. And I think you and I both kind of did the same thing a little bit. Because I remember going to see it, and I'm like, I don't remember this being the premise of what we had talked. Oh, yeah. No, it was completely different.
Yeah, and I believe that I may have at one time had the two movies as one movie in a story that we talked about on the show, too.
Nobody noticed a difference. It's okay.
Yeah. I liked Oblivion. I thought Oblivion was pretty good.
No, it was an excellent movie. And, if you get the Blu-ray, definitely check out the extras. Well worth the time. With how they went about making it and how they really worked. And I talked about this before when I reviewed it, when it was on, Blu-ray, but to see everything that went into making that film look and feel the way it did, exceptional, yeah. Really, just really exceptional.
Do you want to talk about, another movie trailer that came out this week? The Godzilla film. Did you guys see that one?
I have not.
Yeah. Yes.
What'd you think of that, Brad?
Really, you know, and it's been probably about 6 or 8 months since I watched,
Pacific
I can't
Rim?
Remember which Godzilla movie it was. Oh. But you really kind of get a little bit of that feel. It has sort of the feel of the old 60s, 50s Godzilla films and Cloverfield with the intensity, and in the teaser there, you don't entirely see Godzilla until towards the end.
It did have,
it's hinted, and
it definitely had that Cloverfield feel to it.
But you know, the way it's shot and put together, you're really given the feeling of just how freaking big Godzilla is. I mean, just
You know what would be awesome is if the movie was that way through most of it. Like, you don't really know much about Godzilla until a pivotal moment in the film. Like, they talk about it as a threat of some kind, but they don't actually say what it is until the big reveal. That would be cool if they actually did that in the movie itself.
I'm sure that they will. I really, the way movies are done now, especially movies of that type, and especially with what Cloverfield, I think, accomplished. I think trying to keep that feeling of the, if you're a person living and breathing, you know, like in Cloverfield, you don't know what's going on, you know? You're either running away from the devastation and the horror, or, you know, you're not probably going to be up close and personal with the action. So I think I'm kind of rambling here. I kind of lost my train of thought. I apologize. But I really think that I think doing a movie like this with a monster of that size, I think you really have to approach it that way. And I think that's how modern storytelling has moved us towards.
And really, when you look back at the older Godzilla films, they sort of acted that way as well. I think because you couldn't really do much as far as special effects went in those first movies, the first Godzilla movies, you know? Funny that you would mention Cloverfield, because I heard somebody talked about that this week, that if you were to put Cloverfield and Pacific Rim together, Cloverfield actually feels like a prequel to Pacific Rim. You know? The, what they call those monsters in Pacific Rim?
The Kaiju.
Yeah. Because not too many details are talked about in Cloverfield, right? That monster could be a Kaiju from Pacific Rim, if you think about it. Although it's in New York City, and they were in the Pacific Ocean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've got
they might have been able to just kind of, like, walk around, venture around.
Yeah, that's true.
better yet, maybe. Okay.
Atlantic Rim.
Thank you. Maybe Cloverfield is the unifying movie between Pacific Rim and the low-budget Atlantic Rim. Boom.
There is the low-budget Atlantic Rim from Asylum,
yep.
Apparently.
There is? Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
How did I miss that? And how did
I
not...
miss it no more. Actually, I haven't seen it yet.
Is that on Netflix?
I saw it. Go ahead.
Oh, did you see it?
No, I haven't seen the film, but I was at Walmart, and I saw it for purchase. I'm like, no, gonna pass.
I think it's on Netflix.
I'm checking right now. Hang on. I hope
so. If not, it should be shortly, because the Asylum films pop on there pretty quickly.
Oh, related to...
Is that on Netflix or Hulu?
Yeah, it's not on. There's stuff related to it. But it was actually related to Atlantic Rim. I taped it in. It related to Atlantic Rim. So I'm sure that there's some other Asylum films on this list. God.
Maybe it was Hulu. There was somewhere. I want to say it is available for streaming somewhere.
Okay. Hang on. Maybe it's on like one of the pay services. Like Amazon.
Yeah, Atlantic Rim is available on Hulu.
Oh.
At least Hulu Plus.
I'm putting that in my queue right now.
Atlantic Rim.
Representatives of Transatlantic. God.
You know, that's gonna be on Sci-Fi one of these days.
It better be.
Yeah.
Oh, Anessa and I watched Sharknado.
Oh, did you know that they're making a sequel to that, but involves...
Yes, it's Sharknado 2, the second one.
And it's going to have, like, robotic sharks. Like...
In New York City.
Really? Okay, all right.
It's set in New York.
Okay, all right.
is what I heard last, unless they change their mind. But, yeah, it's supposed to be set in New York City.
Sweet. I can't wait. All right.
I think I was driving Anessa crazy with my... The Ian Ziering would show up, and he's just being all
Ian
tough.
Ziering, badass.
Yep. So, like he would like say something and sort of do a little brief pose or something like that, and I'm like, Ian Ziering, badass.
There's got to be a drinking game involved in that somehow.
Oh, I'm sure there already is.
Yeah.
Like from like the end of day one, they're like, drinking game. Let's watch it again.
All right. Well, that's the news. Let's move on. I know we got sidetracked there a little bit. I'm sure
everybody who's listening to this is going, oh, good Lord, get to it. Let's do this.
It was fun for us. And you know what, people? This is the last podcast that you'll get for like a month. So, you know.
we're going to make it craptacular. Yeah. So when we come back, it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's time for... Creature Feature.
All right, what we got this time, people? Who's doing it? I forget.
That's me.
All right, Brad.
Yeah. So, keeping with the theme that we have chosen for me, it's another comic book alien race.
Oh, goody.
Yes, and this race is found in the DC Universe, more in... the Legion of Superheroes comics, and that race is called the Gildishpan. The Gildishpan are the oldest, most powerful, imperialistic, space-faring, aquatic, extraterrestrial race in the universe. Arr! Sorry, I had to throw in the pirate theme. Okay. They also appear to be purple giant tube worms and are powerful telepaths. I'll show you a picture of these things in just a second. The Gildishpan have taken an interest in younger aquatic races, such as the Hikarians, the Karians, and the Atlanteans. They are responsible for uplifting the Hikarians and giving them the gift of interstellar travel. Their homeworld is a frozen planet with methane oceans similar to the lakes of Titan.
Whoa.
And their powers include... Are you ready?
Yes. Lay it on.
There's a laundry list.
Okay.
They're pretty cool. There's underwater breathing. acid spray, telepathy, superhuman vision, superhuman hearing, genius level intellect, longevity, and space warps. They are able to create space warps that open instantaneous transport across interstellar or interdimensional space.
Did you mention yet where these people or where these creatures can be found in the comic books?
Yes. Legion of Superheroes.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yep. Their abilities, they have the ability as master engineers. They often, because they live in a methane, liquid methane environment, they have a dome life support bubble, which some of them use. And that's usually, like I said, when they get out of their atmosphere. And it's a the bubble has a mixture of water and methane gas. And it also is a floating transportational bubble.
So these are like those old 1950s like aliens from that one movie that we watched, Anessa. What was that movie called? With the big the guys with the big helmets. For the sci-fi film school, remember that one?
Mm-mm.
It was like in Scotland or Ireland. Oh, maybe that was before your time.
That might have been, because that doesn't sound familiar to me.
Okay.
Oh, was that the creature from Planet X? Was that the guy with the big goofy? Yeah, that was you and me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that was. Oh, what was it? Something from Planet X.
Yeah, I think it was the creature from Planet X, I believe.
Yeah, it just, ridiculous.
But this guy, but these guys have like a bubble surrounding their entire body. Is that what it is?
Yeah, and I will, I'm going to get an image for you to actually be able to see what they look like.
So, Anessa, I just noticed that you have a lower third, and apparently you're from Zing Bang. Because Brad is from, Brad says his is from, he's from Wausau, Wisconsin. Mine says I'm from Waterloo, Iowa, and yours is Zing Bang.
Zing Bang.
Zing Bang. Very nice.
Thank you.
Shoot.
And for some reason, it changed my last name back to my actual last name, but that's okay.
Okay.
For some reason...
Did you type in Moyens and it changed to Mullins?
Well, it defaulted to Mullins, and then I changed it to Moyens, and I was having issues, as seems to be the trend tonight. And I guess it just changed it back.
Okay. Yeah, you know, Google and their whole...
I apologize to everybody that this is... My computer's kind of getting weird, too, now.
No, don't worry about it.
Okay, finally.
If people want to see a picture, they can Google it themselves.
Oh, no. Because these things are really freakish, and they need to be seen. Here we go. So,
super freaky.
There we go.
Super freak.
So this is what they look like.
Okay.
They are a...
Oh, weird.
Yeah. They're... Wow. Like, this is the bubble that they're in, which is the methane water mix. And they are... Zamir, who is a part of the Legion of Supervillains. And, for them having supervision and super hearing, it's kind of odd because we're really not sure if these are ears or where the eyes are or how that all works. Of course, it's telepathic, too. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on.
That's cool, though. Thank you.
Their habitat, ocean depths. They live in deeper depths, so they can withstand that pressure. They live in high gravity. atmosphere standard oxygen nitrogen with significant ozone components in stratosphere for their actual planet that they lived on. The population is 6.2 billion for their species. Miscellaneous information. Their type of government is a feudal technocracy. Level of technology, high technology level. Obviously, if they can generate their own space warps, they got to be pretty badass. Cultural traits, malevolent. Truly a malicious race with no redeeming qualities at all.
Wow.
And the name Gildishpan is not the real name of this race, but only one translation in Interlak. And Interlak is the language, like the common language of the 30th century. Since there's been heavy contact with aliens, they created their own kind of a common language that everybody could speak, and that is Interlak or intergalactic.
Kind of like standard in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
English is standard.
Or for you D&D fans, common. Anyways, so...
That was Brad's nerd out. That was his nerd moment right there.
Yeah, because I play D&D every Monday night.
Yep.
And I've kissed a girl.
Seriously, we should have you on every single podcast just to do a comic book moment, you know?
Okay.
Seriously. I mean, I learned so much about comics just from your little like creature feature moments or one of your recommendations or whatever. I love it.
Yeah, I'm super nerdy, and yeah, that's what I do.
You're white and nerdy.
Yes.
They see me mowing. Actually, I guess it should be they see Brad mowing his front lawn.
Yes.
I love my front lawn. Actually, it really needs more grass. But hey, that's a story for another day. That is... my alien, my creature feature pick, the alien race known as the Gildishpan.
Gildishpan. Gildishpan. Gildishpan.
Now you're starting to sound like Sean Connery. You wouldn't be so smart if you didn't have those cards, Trebek.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Brad. Great creature feature this time. Picks time. And Anessa, what are you going to tell us tonight?
I picked a movie called Grabbers.
It's not like an R-rated movie from the 1980s, like Porky's.
No.
Okay.
I actually was really excited to see that this had finally made its way to Netflix, because I remember prepping the show, I think it was earlier this year, it might have been last year, and coming across a story about this, but I don't think I included it as one of the actual stories for the show. But anyway, this movie is basically set on a small island off the coast of Ireland. And this island is invaded by these blood-sucking aliens. And these aliens basically look like a big ball of tentacles. And they have like this weird mouth. I guess it's kind of like a squid maybe, and it's got like a thing that like shoots out that like latches onto somebody and like starts sucking their blood.
Let me guess. They grab you.
They do with their tentacles.
Okay.
That's grabbers.
All right.
And so these things, which are actually like the way they move is kind of cool because it makes me think of like a tumbleweed. They roll along after you. And at some point, you know, people end up dying, of course, because these aliens are attacking and sucking their blood. But it becomes like they discover that the aliens don't like blood that has alcohol in it.
Oh.
And so you have a bunch of drunk Irish people trying to survive against these aliens.
Now, to be clear, this movie is made and from and by people from Ireland.
Yes.
It had to be. There was no choice.
So, yeah, it was entertaining. I recommend it. So, this was a movie that I didn't feel bad about having Brad watch with me.
Okay.
It was very, very fun. Very fun.
Cool. So it was an entertaining movie, and I highly recommend it.
So where were they from? Were these alien grabbers?
You don't know where these aliens are from, because initially you've got these fishermen off the coast of Ireland, and there's this big ball of whatever that crashes into the ocean, and on this ball of whatever, because you don't really know, you just see it from a distance impacting the ocean, and they're fishing, and they end up catching one of these things, and then of course it ends up killing the fishermen, and then it makes its way to land, and it just progresses from there. But you don't really know anything about these life forms, because they can't communicate with humans, and they can't tell them what they want. It's basically, you've got the scientists trying to figure things out, and you've got these Irish people also trying to observe and basically figure out how it is that they can fight against these aliens and survive. But yeah, you don't really know as far as where they came from. All you know is that they can survive in water. And they suck blood, and they eventually grow up to be giant balls of tentacles that roll along.
Well, that is an efficient mode of transportation, just rolling.
Yes, it is. Because, some alien movies might have them trying to, walk along a couple of tentacles or something, and I just really dig they're just rolling.
Yeah. No, it's very efficient. I mean, you are a ball.
You're a ball of tentacles, and you've got to get from point A to point B, and you just roll along.
Yeah.
And the little baby aliens, they kind of remind me of these weird-looking flowers, because they narrow at the bottom, and then they kind of go out into a conical shape, a cone shape, and then they have these little tentacles that are starting to form. They've got these little mouths or whatever. And they're I want to eat.
Cute. Okay.
They were kind of cute. So.
Kind of.
Sweet.
In a weird alien sort of way. But yeah, you see these little aliens and you're like, okay, cool. You can totally fight against these things. And then you see their mama and you're like, holy shit.
Let's make a note that where are we at in the podcast? Anessa Moyes.
Anessa curses.
Said the S word.
Yeah, one of the cool things about this is this was a production. It really felt like it was an independent. I think it was an IFC production.
Okay. Yeah, it was that, IFC, I believe.
A film board in Ireland was also a part of the project. For a film that felt like it was a smaller independent production, it's amazing how the effects, the practical effects, but the CG more than anything else, mm-hmm. It wasn't cheap, shoddy, crappy CG. It was really good CG.
How was the CG on this compared to Sharknado?
Way better.
Far better.
Wow, okay, cool.
Far better.
Yeah, no, it was way better than Sharknado. CG.
And, when they do get to investigate one of these grabbers, a smaller one up close, and that's done with practical effects, and you're kind of that's kind of okay. But when they get to the CG, it's freaking phenomenal. How the tentacles move, the skin texture, the look of it. How it functions, and then the babies. There's a scene where there's a room full of babies, and they all move, and they're interesting, and they look realistic in the sense that they belong in the scene and not just some weird CG afterthought.
Cool.
It's really cool to know that the technology of computers, of the software that can run. These things can be used by independent filmmakers to put in the type of effects to rival that of much larger productions.
So why couldn't they get
that? Was really cool.
Why couldn't they get the CG right on Sharknado then?
I think it was intentionally made to be crappy.
Okay, all right.
Because that's what Asylum is known for.
Okay.
Yeah. I just God that I I almost was like, why are we watching this? But I actually kind of wanted to watch it to know how horrible it actually was, and I was not disappointed in the horribleness.
And I said, you know, you're more than welcome. If at any point you're like, I can't take this anymore, we just turn it off and move
on to
the next thing.
That's how I knew that she loved me. She's like, at any point you want to stop, you just yell out the safe word and we stop.
You know, I was thinking safe word. I'm glad you said it.
I beat you to it.
Damn it.
So there you go.
You know, speaking of Ireland, there's a movie that was made in Ireland that I've wanted to see for a long time. It stars Chris O'Dowd, and it deals with time travel. Are you guys familiar with that?
What's the name of the movie?
O'Dowd. I am doing my research at this moment as we talk here.
There's a movie that I've caught the title of that I was wanting to check that had Chris O'Dowd in it. Yeah, I'm just curious if it was that one.
Yeah, it's not. I haven't been able to find it anywhere. Like, it's. Was that who was that? You was that you, Vanessa?
No,
it was me.
My phone's on vibrate.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Damn it, I can't find it. These are all TV shows. He was in a movie that was about time travel, and it was in a pub. So
frequently asked questions about time travel.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. I wish it was available, but you can't. I can't find it. I've looked for it numerous times, and I still haven't been able to find it. So,
and it's not on Hulu or anything?
No, not on Hulu, not on Netflix, not on Amazon, nowhere.
Huh.
iTunes, nothing. It's upsetting.
Weird. I'm sure it will eventually make its way.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. So my pick is the TV show Space 1999. Speaking of Hulu, all the episodes are on Hulu and they look awesome. It looks like they've been remastered. Are you guys familiar with Space 1999?
I am not.
Bradley?
I know of it. I have not seen any episodes of it.
Okay. Well, I think that you should watch because it's really... I was surprised at how good the show is going back to it after many, many years. Like, it deals with very high-concept science fiction subjects, like time travel and aliens, and it's got a very Star Trek vibe to it. You know, it's, you know how Star Trek, especially in the original series and a lot of Next Generation, they dealt with very high-concept stuff, but they put it in that science fiction angle to make people understand it better, I guess. So
make it more relatable, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So Space 1999, in case you're not familiar with the show, it chronicles the trials and tribulations of the inhabitants of Moonbase Alpha. It's an international space research and exploration facility on Earth's moon in 1999. Remember we had that back in 1999? Remember that? It was in the news.
Huge.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So
I miss the moon now.
In 1999, a cataclysmic nuclear accident blasts the moon out of orbit, hurling it into deep space. As involuntary travelers on the runaway moon, the people of Alpha must contend with their new existence of adrift in a hostile and inexplicable universe. So they're basically victims of this moon that launched out of our orbit and is just hurling through space. And apparently it's going really, really fast because it encounters like different planets and different solar systems and stuff. So
I want to know if the Earth actually still exists after this explosion. I mean, for something to jettison the moon so violently from the Earth would have to...
Yeah, it would have to affect
for
us
every
somehow.
Action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. Yeah. That must have just blew up the planet.
Well, according to Carl Sagan, when this TV show first launched, his criticism was if it was a high enough explosion to knock the moon out of the gravitational force of the Earth, it would explode before that would happen.
Yeah, I'm sure that the gravitational force of the Earth would just totally rip it apart.
Yeah, exactly. So, but not happening. But it's good science fiction. And on this episode that I watched for my pick, It's called War Games. It originally aired September 25th, 1974. Moonbase Alpha is attacked by and devastated by warships from a nearby planet. With half of its population dead, Alpha can no longer survive. Commander Koenig and Dr. Russell, those are the two main characters. It's actually couple of the two main characters or actors that were on Mission Impossible. Martin Landau is one of them, and Barbara Bain, those two. They're the two main characters on the show. They must go to the alien world to plead for the survivors, but the inhabitants wish no one to disturb their serene existence. And I'm not going to say anything more than that, because it's got a very interesting plot twist at the end.
Hey, you know what?
Yes.
They have a character. I'm looking through the IMDb cast list. We have Commander John Koenig, Dr. Helena Russell, and we've also got Alan Carter.
Okay. Alan!
Dude,
Alan!
I totally lobbed you a softball, Alan, to use Alan, the soundboard.
Alan!
There we go.
Alan!
Sleeping
Alan.
At the wheel. I was sleeping at the wheel. Oh, my God.
You said before the show started, you're like, man, I hope we get a story that has Alan in it at some point. And
Alan!
There
Alan,
we go.
Alan!
I wasn't thinking. I was actually... Thank you, Brad, for waking me up. I was sleeping.
You're welcome.
In fact, when I was watching the episode earlier, I heard Alan. That prompted me to get that soundboard. So it was a weird, like, chicken before the egg thing. Isn't that funny?
Alan!
See, Alan, now, Alan. Anessa, you're going to hear the name Alan, and that's going to come into your head every time now. I swear to God, I tell the truth. I speak the truth. So, yeah, I recommend Space 1999. For the time, it looked fantastic, although their uniforms were very Star Trek the Motion Picture-like. They were very tight. Like, the dudes had to be careful how they wore their uniforms, because certain things would show up very easily.
Package.
Yes. I wasn't looking, but I assume that's the way that would work. I guess the show was very expensive to make, and that's why it looks so good. And they also used a very minimalistic design in their, like, controls, you know, and their stations were, because they had like a control area, like a bridge. And they didn't really go into detail, which is good, because if you go into too much detail, that can date the show and make it look really, really bad. I always loved the Eagles, which were their spacecraft. And I actually had a model of one of the Eagles when I was growing up, because I loved the show growing up. I actually remember, like, setting up our family room with tables and chairs to make my own, like, control area, like I was on Moonbase Alpha. Seriously.
Nice.
Yeah. So, big fan for a long time, and all the episodes are available on Hulu. And if you're a fan of time-traveling robots in space, you can hear a review of another episode of Space 1999 coming up if you have it in your podcast feed as well. There you go. That's my pick.
Boom.
Brad.
So my pick is actually a book this time.
Whoa. What?
I know.
The world's turned upside down and inside out.
I know. We totally switched places. And my pick is The Restaurant at the End of the Universe by Douglas Adams.
I didn't know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I thought that sounded familiar.
I purchased this in high school, and after Alex was born, he went through a period where he chewed everything. So if you notice, if you've got the Alex actually ate a little bit of the book, literally. So yeah, now it's well loved, and No, it's a very interesting. Douglas Adams is a very interesting writer. And he, did work with Monty Python. He wrote for Doctor Who. He really knows comedy and sci-fi, and this is where this series is really kind of where everything sort of dovetails together very well. The series, The Hitchhiker's Guide, originally started as a radio play, and then became a book. And then it became a series of books, and it was originally meant to be a trilogy, and then it went on to be 5-6 books. Hitchhiker's Guide, Restaurant is the second one, Life, the Universe, and Everything, So Long and Thanks for the Fish, and then Mostly Harmless came after that.
And they're all in the same universe, right?
All in the same universe.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned Doctor Who and Monty Python. Did you know that episode that I had as my pick a few episodes back on the alien invasion, which had the aliens from the Day of the Doctor? What are they called?
The Zygons.
Yeah, Zygons.
The original Zygons episode that was written by Douglas Adams and featured. No, maybe it wasn't that one. But there was an episode of Doctor Who that was written by Douglas Adams that had John Cleese and somebody else from Monty Python in it. And they were in Paris, I believe. So that also brought a lot of that together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting.
That's really cool.
Let's see. He did... oh, man.
I know it was a serial that was filmed in Paris. I know that for a fact. A guaranteed, bona fide fact.
hang on.
By the way, I was while you're doing that, I was on the phone with my lovely girlfriend Stephanie last night. And we were reviewing the words that I must now include in a U on. There's quite a few.
I would keep my American ways.
I want to fit in, you know. I don't want to be a standout. I don't want to be looked at as a freak.
Your accent's going to give you away, so.
That's true. Well, my accent's very, it's not that different because, I mean, most Canadians don't have a super thick Canadian accent.
Ah, okay. It was the City of Death.
Okay, there you go. All right.
Tom Baker episode.
I totally threw a wrench in your pick. I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right.
Okay.
I was wasting time trying to find that information, so okay, I apologize.
Continue.
Anyways, in the second book, it continues on the story of Arthur Dent, Ford Prefect, Zaphod Beeblebrox. Oh my God, I can't believe the Heart of Gold and Trillian, as they decide to kind of putter around a bit and check out other things. And you find out a little bit more about the purpose of the Earth, why it was brought into existence. And you probably, knowing that he's a sci-fi comedy writer, you probably know that it's completely, utterly ridiculous. It's mm-hmm. awesome. And we understand why fjords are so awesome.
Okay. So if you've always wondered why there's fjords and why they're so awesome, then you should read that book.
Yes.
Okay.
Because glaciers.
Because a strangely named alien who actually designed the planet Earth loved fjords because they're fiddly bits. And it's fun to say, I mean, say it with
fiddly
me now.
Bits.
Say it with me now. Fiddly bits.
Fiddly bits.
Fiddly bits.
See, that's just fun to say.
Douglas Adams is awesome, I have to say.
fiddly bits, yeah. I occasionally say that at work, because why not? Anyways, yeah, I mentioned that this is a radio play. There was also the BBC actually made a mini-series of this in the early 80s with a lot of the same actors that did the radio play as well.
I remember listening to the original radio play, so maybe that wasn't it that I listened to. I remember listening to Hitchhiker's Guide completely. I think it was on public radio, I believe.
Yes, yep. Yeah.
I haven't listened to the radio thing, but I listened to, or I watched the TV series, the BBC.
Oh, cool.
I had it on VHS.
Oh, cool.
Yep. I no longer have it on VHS, but I had it on VHS.
I bet you that you can get it again in digital form in some way.
I'm probably sure I can.
Yep.
So anyways, the entire series is pretty good. When you get to Mostly Harmless, it's fairly evident that Douglas Adams got really tired of people saying, hey, are you going to write another Hitchhiker's book? And it's actually one of the more malevolent ones that you'll read.
Wow, okay. Interesting.
I mean, he had really seemed to – it felt like he got tired of writing the books and being asked to write more books and just – he ended it. That was that.
From what I understand is he was really pumping those things out on a pretty steady pace, like at least for the radio play part of it.
Yeah.
Like he would, they would produce one at the same time he'd be writing the next one. It was a very hurried, it was like a machine basically.
Yeah. And it, you know, towards the end of his life, he actually had moved on to do video games.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
He actually did a game, and it was during the time of Myst, really more Myst, in between Myst and Riven. And he wrote a game called The Starship Titanic, and it really has a Hitchhiker's feel to it. If you can find the game, and granted it's older, and I'm not sure if you can find a version that runs on a newer computer, but he was also asked to write a book about the Starship Titanic. And the Starship Titanic is actually mentioned briefly within the series.
Now, I have a question for you. Do you think that's where the Doctor Who franchise got the idea for the Titanic spaceship in the rebooting of the Doctor Who series?
Maybe.
Yeah. I guess
I can see some elements of it that are kind of Adams-esque, if that is even a word.
Well, you could make it a word.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It could have been a tip of the hat to him.
Tip of the hat. Okay.
But the interesting thing about the book, The Starship Titanic, and we're kind of getting afield here, is it's actually written by Terry Jones.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Douglas Adams wanted to work on the game and would rather have been set on fire than write a book. And he went to Terry Jones and said, hey, would you write this book? And Terry Jones said, yes, only if I can write it while I'm nude. And he said, I don't care. Do what you want.
Perfect. That's funny.
So Terry Jones wrote The Starship Titanic, which is a very entertaining book. I highly recommend that one, too. He wrote it in the nude. So there you go. Anyways, Douglas Adams, great sci-fi comedy. You can get the audiobooks, I'm sure, at Audible. You can read the books. Highly recommend them. And the radio plays, if you can find them, check it out.
I wonder who reads the Audible books for those. I could find out real quick. I'm curious.
You know, I actually have I think it's an abridged CD collection that Douglas Adams narrated of The Hitchhiker's Guide.
Wow, okay. The one on Audible is narrated by Stephen Fry.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
That's pretty perfect.
Yeah.
He has a phone book voice.
Martin Freeman narrates Mostly Harmless.
Oh.
Martin Freeman also does So Long and Thanks for the Fish. So it looks like a lot of Martin Friedman going on here.
I really dig him as an actor. I've seen some of his interviews, and it's great. He doesn't like to give your typical
serious
interview.
Answers.
Yeah, somebody asked him, "So how did things go with making the movie? How did you? I mean, you made all these. You know, it was supposed to be two, then it was three, and he's like, it was fueled pretty much by cocaine."
Perfect.
And it was cool that the interviewer knew what kind of interview that she was going to get with Martin Freeman. And she just rolled with it and just continued on. She didn't just hang on that answer. She just, you know, moved it along. But it was very, very funny and interesting.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Let's move along with the show.
Absolutely.
That about wraps it up. Before we get out of here, we've got a little bit of feedback. I don't know how to present this, though. Brad, this might be in your corner since you're so good at screen grabs, and you'll really want to watch the video of this show to get this. We got a little bit of something from one of our Down Under fans, John Holloway. And if you're watching our YouTube or our live video, you see on the screen what looks like a bird.
And he refers to it as a Guten spycraft disguised as a bird.
As a bird.
I knew the Gutens were here. I knew they were up to something, and now we know. Thank you, Big John. Appreciate that. That's cool. And speaking of feedback, you can provide us with feedback by emailing it to galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. That's with an S at the end. galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Our voicemail number is 805-328-3966. And just go to galacticnetcasts.com for everything else. And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. And take that survey, tinyurl.com/galacticsurvey2013, and make us a better network for 2014. Speaking of that, that's going to do it until next year. I'm kind of sad.
I know.
A little bit.
But you know what? It's going to be better. I will be in a different country. You guys will be... Anessa, are you going to be in Wisconsin on our next one? Or when are you going to be there?
Well, if we're not doing it on the 2nd of January, then no, I'm not going to be in Wisconsin on the next one.
Oh, okay.
Because I fly back on the 6th of January.
Oh, bad timing.
I know. I can't say that I'm coming to you guys from Wausau, Wisconsin.
Well, the 6th is what day? What day is that?
Monday.
Oh, yeah. God, it's going to be... I'm not going to have enough time to get settled in and get the podcast prepped and all that stuff, so...
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Although you'll be happy to know that after Anessa moves in and we kind of shuffle around rooms and we adjust the man cave, we're going to have podcast cave and office.
Oh, awesome. Are you going to get a sign?
Yeah, we've been talking about how we were going to rearrange and some more planning when I'm up there.
You got to get a sound like a mixing board, Brad.
That's the plan.
Yeah, that's a part of it.
And that way you can start producing podcasts on your own too. And we can...
That's another part of the plan too.
Build the network. Build the empire.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the plan.
Cool.
Is board and mics and stuff.
Cool.
So. Yep. I've been talking about the show that I want to do about gaming and stuff called The Adventure Party.
That's awesome.
And I've got things already worked out in my head, how to do the show, who I want to be on the show, and guests. And
is it going to be on Galactic Netcasts?
Duh.
See, we're empire builders, my friend. We are empire builders. All right, so that's
I don't have any ideas for podcasts.
Well, something relating to this.
It'll be like lessons that I've learned living up north, what not to do in the wintertime.
Sure. Yes.
You could do a geology podcast.
I could.
Yeah, totally.
Or not.
I need to learn more about the geology up there, though.
That's true. Oh, we'll be taking plenty of trips around the area.
And I have that book, The Roadside Geology Guide of Wisconsin.
Actually, I have the book.
I know. You have the book.
Anyway. anyways, enough of the Vanessa and Brad show, Dave. We should probably wrap this up.
Yes. If you want more of the Vanessa, if you want more of the Vanessa and Brad show, tune in to the latest Time Traveling Robots in Space, because Paul's not going to be on this week. Brad's going to be filling in. So more of Vanessa and Brad on Time Traveling Robots in Space coming up next.
I'm sure people aren't going to want to watch
it
now.
Christ.
Like, oh, more of Brad. That guy just freaking babbles and won't shut up about stuff. Jesus Christ.
Again, like I said, we're not going to have a podcast for a month. So we're all right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Final thoughts, Brad?
I'm not ready for Christmas. Wow. I got the tree up. Alex helped me put I got an artificial tree. Alex helped me put the tree up. And this weekend we're going to work on actually decorating that thing.
Cool.
Going to be fun.
All right. Vanessa, what do you got?
Watch out for the birds.
Or are they Gutens?
They're Gutens spacecraft.
That's why you got to watch out for the birds.
All right. All right. Everybody.
They'll drop their goo on your head. And
yeah. It may
that's
be
gross.
It may be white.
One of them dropped their goo on my jacket once. It was really awful.
All right. That's going to do it. Thanks for joining us. Happy holidays, everybody. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.